We'll proceed with the last case of the morning. This is Charles Robinson versus United States. Mr. Cothrell.
May it please the Court, my name is Brian Cothrell, and I represent the petitioner-appellant Charles R. Robinson IV. The basic issue in this case is whether final means final or final means something else. In my limited time before the Court this morning, I would like to address primarily three issues. First, whether Mr. Robinson timely filed his habeas petition under 28 U.S.C. 2255 when he filed it within a year of the date that the Supreme Court denied his petition for rehearing. Second, if Robinson filed his petition in a timely fashion, whether his counsel rendered ineffective assistance by failing to reconduct voir dire following a 17-day break at trial. And three, if Robinson's petition was not timely, whether the principles of equitable tolling may permit his petition to be heard on the merits. Turning to the first question, I submit that Mr. Robinson's petition was timely. The limitation date under 2255, paragraph 6, paren 1, runs from the date on which the judgment of conviction becomes final. The Supreme Court has consistently interpreted finality to attach in a post-conviction context when an order of cert is finally denied. Now, in this case, where you have a denial of cert and someone petitions for rehearing, under the rules of the Supreme Court, until that petition for rehearing is denied, that denial certiorari is not final. And because that opportunity exists for rehearing, I submit that the Supreme Court decision in Simpson is instructive. The Simpson Court held, interpreting a section of the tax code presenting a similar, if not identical, definition of finality, held that petitions for certiorari were qualified. And it did so by looking to its own rules and using those rules to define finality where the statute did not. Now, even after this rule was incorporated to include the language that an order denying cert may not be issued only upon suspension by the court or a justice, both the Supreme Court and the Circuit Courts of Appeal continued to deem certiorari denials as qualified. The First Circuit decision in Hanover and the Eighth Circuit decision in Blair drive this point home because neither case found that modified language made any difference in what is now Rule 16.3, which has the language that incorporates a suspension upon a denial of certiorari where the court decides to deny certiorari.
Of course, 16.3 doesn't say notice. Will not be suspended. It says the order of denial will not be suspended. How do we reconcile that with your position that this line relates only to notice?
Your Honor, I think it's important to take a step back and look at how Rule 16.3 interacts with what happens at the Court of Appeals and also how Rule 45 interacts with a judgment on the merits by the Supreme Court. When the Circuit Court of Appeals issues its mandate, that mandate becomes effective. And if you petition for cert, that has no effect on that mandate. The only way it would is if you ask for a stay under Appellate Rule 41. So at the time a denial of certiorari is issued by the Supreme Court, that does nothing. In contrast, if you look at Rule 45 of the Supreme Court, if they hear a case on the merits and a petition for rehearing is filed, they will stay their mandate until the rehearing petition is decided. And so if you look at it, 16.3 doesn't do anything but notify the court below and counsel that the order of cert has been denied. It has no effect on the judgment as standing. And so if you look at the Tenth Circuit case of Willis, which makes this analogy to determine that, well, that means that an order denying certiorari is final, there's a distinction to be made between how a court treats a case once it hears it on the merits versus how it treats a case when it denies certiorari. So I think that's where it becomes a notification rule, and that's why it's been consistently interpreted in that manner.
Well, if it hears the case on the merits, that means it first granted cert.
Correct.
And if you deny cert, that's the end, isn't it?
No, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. If you have a denial of cert as a matter of right under the rules, you have an opportunity for the Supreme Court to reconsider its decision. So I would submit that under the case law that Clay cites, such as Linkletter, Johnson, Griffith, Casperi, all the cases in post-conviction relief context where they said a petition for cert is not denied until it is finally denied, I would say to give meaning to that phrase means to treat a denial of certiorari as final only if and when the Supreme Court denies a petition for rehearing. Now, in Clay, they looked at this in the context of AEDPA, and I think it's important to take a step here and look at what AEDPA does. AEDPA takes these post-conviction relief cases and what finality means in the post-conviction relief context and merges that body of law with cases such as Simpson and Flynn that interpret how finality should be determined when an order for cert is denied. And when you put those two bodies of case law together, it makes those cases like Simpson and Flynn and Blair relevant. And in this situation, off of Clay, where Clay says finality means when a petition for cert is denied, what does that mean? Simpson and Flynn and the cases following those fill the void and say, in that situation, denial cert is not final until a petition for rehearing is final. And when you look at that, I think it also makes this court's decision in Horton, which states that an order denying certiorari is a final order. Clay casts Horton in a new light, because what Clay does is it says AEDPA didn't change how we looked at this situation, didn't change how orders for certiorari are deemed qualified and not a final determination of that court, subject to all those consequences.
How do you get past Marcello? We seem to be saying in Marcello that the conviction is final when the Supreme Court denies certiorari, irrespective of the opportunity to petition the Supreme Court for rehearing. Do we have to get past Marcello, do you think?
No, I do not think you have to get past Marcello for two reasons. First is that Marcello is a situation where it's what Marcello argued was is that the time should not start until this court receives the order from the Supreme Court. So it's really a question of how the Circuit Court of Appeals deals with the situation once the Supreme Court gets it. I would suggest that that's not the issue. The issue is when does the Supreme Court finally make a determination? Second is that in Horton, this court noted that until the Supreme Court has no longer has any more to do with the case, that should be the end of it. So I would say Horton reaffirms the position that until certiorari and then by way of petition for rehearing is finally denied, that's the situation at which the conviction becomes final. And I will reserve any remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gilmore.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Greg Gilmore for the United States. Good morning. Your Honors, Congress instituted some restrictive provisions in the AEDPA Act of 1996 to provide finality to convictions, to provide clarity. Petitioner's argument that he should receive the benefit of extending the finality provisions until rehearing is denied ignores Horton and Marcello. It's not consistent with those cases. In Horton, the petitioner didn't get those extra 25 days, so that wouldn't even be it's inconsistent with this case, because if the conviction is final, which it was in Horton when cert was denied, you don't even get that far. And same thing with Marcello. If the petitioner would have gotten those extra 25 days, it wouldn't be relevant whether it was one day after cert denied or when the mandate was received and those types of issues. So I would contend that it is clear that a conviction is final upon denial of certiorari.
You know, you didn't really respond to the defendant's argument about the First Circuit's ruling in Durman. And we seem to have a circuit split, you know, if we agree with you on Marcello and Horton. So we need to decide who has the better argument. Where did the First Circuit go wrong?
Your Honor, I would disagree that the First Circuit in Durman was inconsistent with, or would be inconsistent with, affirming this case in the sense that in Durman, the court stated the conviction was final when cert was denied or the time to file certiorari lapses. Basically, they reiterated the rule in Clay, the Clay rule of 2003 with the Supreme Court. They didn't extend it for rehearing. They extended it to when the time to file for certiorari had lapsed, that extra 25 days. So I think it is consistent, Your Honor, and it would be consistent with the Fourth Circuit's case of Seegers, which relied on Horton, the Eighth Circuit's case of Campofabella, Tenth Circuit, Fifth Circuit, and Eleventh Circuit.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that the First Circuit, it seems to me that what the First Circuit did was say that the judgment is final on the date that the Supreme Court denies rehearing on the denial of cert. I mean, it's the only court to take this approach so far, I believe.
Your Honor, at page 42 of that opinion, the court said, "We will not paint the lily. We hold that a conviction for a federal defendant who fails to file a petition for a writ of certiorari becomes final when the period in which he seasonably might have done so expires."
Yeah, but that might very well, seems to me, might very well include the time by which the Supreme Court denies rehearing.
But they'll never get that far, Your Honor, if the petition, they're extending it to when he could have filed for certiorari. If he doesn't file for certiorari, then we never even reach the questions about rehearing or if certiorari was denied and those sorts of things.
You know, what's the harm of waiting until the direct appeal is truly final after the Supreme Court has denied any timely filed petitions for rehearing before we start the clock for filing the habeas proceeding? And why should we treat finality differently in the T context than we treat it in the habeas context?
Your Honor.
Help me.
I would contend that, or we would contend that Congress in this act wanted finality and clarity, and they put in some restrictive gatekeeping provisions. In Horton, the court has stated, this court has stated, that the petition was untimely since the denial of cert was final. He contended he had those extra 25 days for rehearing. If this court were to rule that if you file for rehearing, then you receive that extra time period, it wouldn't be as clear as the rule would stand now that when certiorari is denied, that a conviction is final. And the Supreme Court in Clay could have written, instead of writing that it's in the post-conviction arena, finality attaches when the court affirms a conviction, denies a petition for a writ of certiorari, or when the time for filing a petition expires, they could have written when the time for filing rehearing lapses or when rehearing is denied on a denial of petition.
Well, but then why did the court say finally denied instead of denied? It must have meant after any timely petition for rehearing has been denied.
Your Honor, I think possibly this case provides something in that arena. The conduct in this case occurred in 1996. It was charged by complaint in May of 97, indicted in June 97, a trial in December 97. Here it is 2005, and we're talking about the denial of certiorari. I would contend that it would be a fair characterization to say when certiorari was finally denied in reference to an 8-year period of court proceedings and appeal processes.
Why did Judge Mills give 100 years to this man?
Your Honor, the judge had to, in the sense that the guidelines called for a sentence within the range, and the range was life. Count 1 and 3 provided a statutory max of 40 years. Count 2 provided a statutory max of 20 years. Robinson received basically every enhancement that was possible, including threatening to kill a trial witness, carrying a gun, being a manager, supervisor, obstruction of justice for perjury. He had all of these enhancements, and so his offense level was very high in addition to being a career offender in criminal history category 6. So his guideline range was a 43. It was life. The statute didn't provide for a life sentence in that none of the offenses of conviction provided up to life. They provided up to 20 or up to 40 years. So Judge Mills was required to sentence him consecutively to the maximum sentences under the statute, and that meant 40, 40, and 20 was the 100 years. So that is how he arrived at that sentence. If there are no other questions, Your Honor.
Is this the kind of case the Booker is meant to remedy?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. This individual's conduct, criminal conduct, and his record, criminal history, and all those sorts of things, I would contend this is the type of case where although I clearly agree that when you read 1,200 months, it's a shock, it's a long sentence.
I thought it was a misprint at first.
Well,
so
I'd heard
I
that before when others in my office had read the brief. When we reviewed it and those sorts of things. But he was the type of individual that called for a life sentence, and in real terms, that's what he got, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Guthrow.
In contrast to what the government is stating here, the goals of finality and clarity are not undermined by our position. Instead, in this case, it simply provides a different outcome. By treating finality as the date the Supreme Court finally decides a case, that is, when you have no other option available, when either you've failed to file a petition for cert and that time's expired, or the Supreme Court has affirmed on the merits, or in this case, you get your petition for cert denied, you petition for rehearing, at that point, it becomes final. And in this case, he filed his petition within the time frame provided in AEDPA, 1 year within the date of his petition for rehearing being denied. In reference to the Booker issue, I would submit that there is a Booker situation here. The 100 years was dictated by the guidelines, and under 18 U.S.C. 3584, there's at least some decision of whether or not the sentence should run concurrently or consecutively when multiple sentences are imposed. So there is at least, I submit, a Booker question here, and that in addition to the questions he's raised on the remainder of his petition claims, 16 in all, which were not decided by the district court on the merits, but rather only the procedural issue was decided, that this court should remand back to the district court for a full rehearing of every one of his 16 challenges to his conviction and sentence.
Isn't application of Booker here foreclosed by McReynolds?
It would certainly appear that way, Your Honor. The government chose not to argue it in its appeal, and so I would at least say at this point that we're not willing to wave the white flag yet, but it certainly would appear that the McReynolds decision forecloses, based on Teague, a Booker argument. But regardless of that fact, should this court find that the petition was timely, as we submit, it should remand so that all 16 claims may be heard by the district court on the habeas petition. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Case be taken under advisement. I understand you were court appointed, were you not?
Yes.
I appreciate your accepting the assignment and your vigorous advocacy for your client. That completes the arguments for this morning. And the court will be in recess until
when?
Tomorrow.
Until 9:30 tomorrow morning.